I'm Marco Werman. You're with The World. Feeling like you belong, that can be tough at any age, but the struggle to fit in high school, well, that's a whole nother level of trying to belong. In her new book, How to Make White People Laugh, Iranian-American comic Nagin Farsad chronicles her efforts to do just that in Palm Springs, California. She says she just wanted to hang out with the Mexican kids, and when her only Iranian-American classmate started dating a Mexican girl, Farsad saw firsthand how explosive racial identity can be.
Everyone was just like, this can't be happening, you know. She was a part of the ESL, the English as a Second Language program, a new immigrant. And the other Iranian kid in my high school, he was in the AP programs, and he was like a smarty pants. And it just was sort of like, this is a socioeconomic clash. This is an ethnic clash. But to me, it sort of really made sense, because it was like, you're both of your parents, you know, don't speak English very well. You go home and eat different foods. You go home and have a different relationship with religion. Mm. And that sort of is harmonious. So I thought that their relationship really made sense, but it was a big scandal at Palm Springs High School.
I went to school down south, and I was always kind of amazed at how groups just self-segregated. Mm. When you started seeing this, I assume you did. What did you make of it?
Well, I just felt like as an Iranian-American muzz, I just didn't know which group to also segregate into. I think that's kind of what ends up happening, you know. And in college, there were no Mexicans, you know, as far as the eye could see, which is the group that sort of made me feel at home. And I ended up becoming, you know, kind of, that's when my Black formation really began. You know, I started really like studying the canon of Black film and really getting into Black culture and Black politics. And I ended up, like most comedians, getting a master's degree in African American studies. And so I really, you know, kind of went, and I still do, and I still will fight for those rights whenever I can. But at a certain point, this was the aftermath of 9/11, you know, people were like, don't you have your own people? And I was just like, how could you say that? I have the DVD box set of A Different World in my backpack. You know, I am committed. But at a certain point, you know, I did have my own people. And with Islamophobia on the rise, which it's been sort of steadily on the rise since then, I realized that I could have a voice that was helpful.
You actually kind of got a deep dive into the sorority fraternity scene in college. Given how white that was, what was that like for you?
I sort of likened it to being like the straight coat check girl at a gay bar. Like, you're just sort of totally invisible when you're a person of color in the Greek system. And I mean, I wasn't in the Greek system. I just, like, you know, I just dipped my toes in, you know, by going to frat parties and just being like, hey, I'm here. Like, I'm ethnic, and I'm going through a strange goth phase / gypsy phase. And I was really just trying to kind of figure out where I belonged. And it wasn't at frat parties.
Mm. You describe a time when you're doing a show and a group of Muslim women seated together wearing hijabs. They get up and they walk out because they consider your material shameful. Mm. Iranian women and another audience label you a whore.
Yeah.
How painful is all this?
I mean, I'm not going to lie. Like, I'm, you know, I mean, I am a comedian, so in some ways I'm dead inside. But also, I do, like, you know, still activate the feelings. And I performed in Tucson, Arizona. And like you said, a group of hijabi women got up and left during my set. And you know, it was 400 people in that theater. And when these, like, 20 or 30 women got up and left, it was a big show. It was a big statement. And they wanted to hurt me, you know. And I was hurt by it. And it's that kind of thing really sucks. I'm not going to lie. But I think what I've been able to do is now talk about it. You know, that scene kind of that made it into my last film, The Muslims Are Coming, and it made it into my book. And I think it's sort of giving us all a chance to reflect on how we're treating each other, like, within the Muslim community, as well as how we are being treated as Muslims.
I wanted to ask you about the word muzz. You use it a lot in your book. You're a muzz.
It's just a shorthand, fun way. I think we actually never think of Muslims as fun, and we don't think of the word as fun. And I'm trying to just subtly change that by, like,
you're
using
marketing
some
this word, huh?
Yeah, just using some slang to talk about the muzz thing.
Registered trademark from Megan Forsyth. Years after college, you reconnected at a bar with your blonde, uber-popular college roommate. You call her Molly in the book. Mm. And she's pretty upset about how she had treated you in college. And she's crying because, as you put it in your book, her freshman self didn't understand that there was a real difference between us or what it felt like to never question belonging. So what happened in that visit with Molly?
Molly was, like, wonderful. You know, she was a really great friend, but she was always, like, trying. She was the one that was, like, trying to get me to these frat parties and putting me in situations where I wasn't accepted, and she didn't understand that I wasn't accepted. And it took her 10 years to realize what she had grown up with, this kind of easy acceptance and popularity and blonde beauty and all of that stuff. And so, you know, it was interesting. And she cried. She cried in front of me. She thought, I didn't understand what some of the people of color around me were going through because I was just, like, busy. I was going, you know, pledging a sorority, and I was having the time. And I didn't realize that you guys weren't.
Speaking of guilt, you went on a visit to Iran some years ago,
yeah.
Back to the homeland, and you grappled with what you call guilt, guilt that you have the American dollar to fall back on, guilt knowing that you could go home and wear what you want when you get there.
Yeah.
Tell us about that and how you came to terms with that guilt.
My cousin was getting married, and we were the same age, and I thought, like, oh, I can't talk about, you know, boys or alcohol or peaceable assembly, you know, these freedoms we have in the United States. And I felt like, how could they be happy? They don't have any of these freedoms. And so that was really tough for me. But being in Iran and being around the kind of community that they have and the family units that they build for each other, they have, I think, more fun than the average American because they really cherish the little things and the little freedoms that they have. They cherish them so much. You know, I ended up while in Iran also breaking a toilet by sitting on it. Side note, I sat on a toilet that was made of porcelain, and I cracked it open in half by the sheer force of just me sitting on it. So that's something that I always can take to my grave, knowing that I broke a toilet in Iran.
It was a toilet. You're a relatively small stature, let's face it. Right?
The toilet had seen better days, but I didn't think I was going to be the one to break it.
How guilty did you feel about that?
Yeah, you don't know what it's like to walk down the stairs of your aunt's house carrying a piece of porcelain and saying to her, I broke the toilet. And then she said, oh, that flush never works. And I said, no. And I held up a piece of porcelain. I said, I really literally broke a toilet. So there you go.
Iranian-American stand-up comedian Nagin Farsad's new book is called How to Make White People Laugh. I was laughing out loud while I read it. I even laughed at the author bio on the back.
Oh, good.
Nagin, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
There was so much more to our interview, so we posted the extended version on our Twitter. You can hear Nagin talk about feeling black, passing as white, and how eating a bag of Cheetos sometimes helped clear up her confusion about her identity. Just look for PRI's The World on Twitter. You're listening to The World.